Welcome to the Safe and Sound Protocol podcast, a polyvagal theory-informed therapy. I'm your host, Joanne McIntyre. Here we talk everything polyvagal and SSP related. Dr. Porges has provided us with a revolutionary framework for understanding the connection between our autonomic nervous system and behavior. The SSP acoustic intervention is an exciting new therapy helping people all around the world.
Hello and welcome to episode 31. Today is a very special gathering of fellow ILS instructors to honour the life of Ron Minson, MD, whose life work impacted so many. Integrated listening systems changed lives from the bottom up. Dr. Ron, as we called him, received his medical degree from UCLA School of Medicine and is board certified in psychiatry and neurology. His general medical background includes serving as a family physician and health center medical director and clinical psychiatrist. Dr. Minson served as chief of psychiatry for the Presbyterian Medical Center and director of behavioral sciences at Mercy Hospital in Denver. However, his life took a radical new pathway when he witnessed the successful treatment of his daughter for severe depression and dyslexia from a sound therapy program. He subsequently chose to devote his life to learning about the power of filtered sound in clinical application, develop programs, and taught practitioners so more people could heal from sound and bone conduction therapy. He developed dynamic listening systems, which he integrated into his psychiatric practice. And later in 2007, ILS was launched to provide a more affordable and multi-sensory therapy, which is sound combined with visual, vestibular, and movement that could be used in homes and schools as well as therapy clinics. Dr. Minson worked closely with his wife, Kate Minson. Some words from Kate. In the time I have been an eyewitness to Dr. Minson's trajectory in the field of psychoacoustics, the branch of psychology concerned with sound and its physiological effects, I have noticed a few common themes that run through his professional life story. A willingness to go boldly into uncharted territory, an unquenchable thirst for knowledge, and an equally passionate desire to help people. Please enjoy my conversation with fellow ILS trainers Doreen Hunt, Anne Brownstone, Dylan Hartley, and Marion Judd, all esteemed clinicians, as we honour the memory and work of Dr. Minson, sharing his knowledge and the powerful impact of the ILS and PRO system with clients. You will sense the gratitude we all feel to have been a part of the ILS family and the privilege it was to be able to teach the work. So welcome, everybody. I'm so happy that we've come together today to play tribute to Dr. Ron Minson. I know that we all have some heartfelt stories to share and some amazing knowledge to share that he imparted with us all. As you all know that I've already sort of done a recording, sort of giving a bit of a background and a bio for Dr. Minson and introducing what our discussion's about. So I just wanted to start off by saying, again, thank you so much for coming together for today. And I thought maybe we start with you just introducing yourself, whereabouts in the country that you're located, and just a little bit how, you know, your story, your introduction to Dr. Minson and kind of how that's impacted you. So how about Dylan? I'm going to put you on the spot.
No worries. So my name is Dylan Hartley. I'm an occupational therapist, and I have a pediatric private and adult private practice here in Greenville, South Carolina. We have now seven clinics, and we serve clients, you know, at all different ages. And I got introduced to Dr. Minson through advanced training many, many, many years ago. It was a true shock to my system. I think I matured at least 2 to 3 years in that initial training. Me and three of my colleagues went for training, and that's where I got to meet Dr. Robinson and then Miss Kate as well. And just was totally in awe of that experience, and I can share more later, but that's just a little bit about me. I'm still very much a practicing OT. I have 36 hours of clinical care a week, mostly one-on-one care with kids. Still using all the tools in my belt, including the focus and SSP, and doing a good bit of mentorship when I can. So it's a little bit about me.
And so, Dylan, why don't we just share a little bit too? How did you become an ILS instructor? How did that journey happen?
Well, actually, I have to honor Mary Jones in that experience. And so I was an instructor for Interactive Metronome for quite a few years, and I just had a passion for educating and traveling and meeting people and learning from them. And I had this, just this existing sort of, I guess, skill set or idea of sharing. And I went for advanced training, and I just had the opportunity to start training with ILS then, Dr. Minson. And he mentored me, and then Kate mentored me. And then I just started training. So yeah, that's kind of how it started.
Well, Dylan, I have to ditto that in terms of honoring Mary Jones as well. Mary Jones, you've been becoming a really good friend and a funny companion. And yeah, I'd been using a different sound therapy at the time in my practice, and she'd recommended, oh, you need to learn about this ILS system. So she was teaching in the Tampa Bay area at the time. So she said, come along to a training. So I went, and yeah, it just sort of, well, the journey started from there. But in terms of just the whole neuroscience of behind the program, how those, music is modified into those frequency bandwidths and how they impact the body, and then the expected changes that we see, we actually see those on the end. So yeah, started my journey to do the advanced training, where that's where I met Dr. Minson and his wife Kate Minson as well. And I think through that mutual introduction and a little bit of a pat on the back from Mary, but I think just lucky enough the stars were aligned at the time where that started my journey of becoming an ILS instructor as well. But yeah, I'm glad that we both share that mutual sort of connection there with Mary as well. Just an amazing human, like funny lady.
Totally cool human.
Yes, yeah. So Anne, would you like to share your story a little bit?
Sure. I met Dr. Minson and Kate back in 2004, and I'm a pediatric occupational therapist, and I was working with some private clients in England at the time, and one of them came back to Massachusetts to get some sound therapy, and it happened to be the DLS, the Dynamic Listening Systems, with Ron's work, Ron and Kate's work. And she came back to England completely changed, this little 5-year-old, like a completely different nervous system. I could tell she was had amazing changes. So I called Dr. Minson and talked to Kate and flew to Denver and did the advanced training in 2004 and bought the original equipment. And so that's how I was introduced to them and felt like I stepped into a family, just like warm and supportive, and just saw some massive changes we'll talk about later in the hour with the clients I was working with. So that's how it was my entree. And then I started to teach for them in 2007 when they started using the Focus more compact and portable equipment. And the rest is history. Met all of you wonderful people after that time.
And where are you located now, Anne?
I'm in California, in Santa Cruz area, California. So I don't have the snow. I have a little bit of rain, but no snow.
Oh, thank you for sharing. And Doreen, I think you can share a little bit of the snow there.
I drove over the pass in snow today, so yes. But see, I'm in Seattle. I'm a pediatric OT, and so rain as soon as I got over the pass, which was always sad to leave the snow because I am a snow-loving individual. But I immersed myself in it all weekend. Anyhow, I have just a strong history of in pediatric OT where I was a strong sensory integration based, looking at bottom-up processing with my clients. And was on this journey to figure out which was the best sound program that I wanted to really incorporate into therapy. I dabbled a little bit and got connected with somebody to get connected with ILS to learn more about them and to bring them to Seattle. So I was like organizing a training in Seattle. And when doing that, I offered to pick up the speaker, and it was Kate and Randall. And so I picked them up at the airport, went to dinner, and it was like this friendship that you'd think we knew each other forever when we went out to dinner that first night. And anyhow, had that class here in Seattle and began my journey with using ILS, the focus system, in our practice. And then it was one time I was in Denver, and I had become a strong user of the ILS in our clinic. And being in Denver for a visit for some reason, anyhow, Kate and I went to dinner, and she asked if I would become a trainer, and she and Anne both mentored me. We did a training in Seattle together, and I did multiple trainings alongside of either Anne or Kate back in the beginning. And Dr. Minson, emerging into getting to know him was definitely with the big SSP, I'm sorry, the big symposiums, the ILS symposiums, and then the Advanced Pro training. Was definitely kind of my journey along that way. So yeah.
Lovely. Yeah. And you're
And
right.
then I'm
Hey, go
training with
on.
you, Joanne.
Yeah, I was gonna say you were one of my mentors when I was learning to become an instructor, which was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that. And you're right, you did feel like you're part of a family. And I think that's why I really wanted to bring us together to share some of our stories and to share more of the story behind Dr. Minson's work and the knowledge behind the ILS focus system and also the PRO system, the advanced system. Yeah. So Marianne Judd, I'd like to, Dr. Marianne Judd, she has a little bit of a different story to us. So Marianne, please, share a little bit about your background.
Well, I'm a psychologist and I work with children with learning difficulties that took me into Steiner education. So I'm involved with training people in the extra lesson training in Australia. And for a while, we were in a few other countries. But when I was starting to reflect, and I thought when I first came across Ron was with a former sound therapy that he had helped design. So I did that training. I was using that system in Australia and then went back to America to train in the DLS. So here I've got to honor Maxwell Frabelle because he and Ron became, and Maxwell's an osteopath, and he and Ron became quite good buddies. They shared a lot. And so then we decided we'd get together and we'd get a DLS system. So that's what we started with. And then Maxwell's brother-in-law, Harry, also joined us with that. And it was just seeing the transformations in the children when they were doing a full program, like they do 30 sessions with the DLS. And it was like, wow, this is something. And then I found, as an individual practitioner, it was absolutely groundbreaking when iPods came out, and then the ILS system could be like, I used the Pro mainly for many, many years. And that just became, I put the two together, the movement and the Pro system. And I'd see these astonishing changes in children. And then gradually over time, I sort of integrated the focus. And, but yes, it was, I'd have to say that Ron using, you know, training us in the DLS, and that was quite a little amusing time as well.
So, and just for our listeners, the DLS standard for
dynamic listening system.
Yeah, and that was at the time this huge, big machine that was about the size of a dishwasher and was quite costly, correct?
Oh, it was very costly for us to bring into Australia because of currency exchange rates at the time. But in the long run, just seeing the changes and then being able to move then on to using iPods was just a revolution because it allowed the movement.
And then you brought Kate and Ron out to Australia, is that right?
Well, yes, we brought Kate and Ron out and we became the distributors for ILS initially in Australia.
Let's start that journey here.
We just started doing the training. And because Maxwell is an osteopath, he had a lot of neuroanatomy. And then because of my background in movement, then and we were also I was involved in trying to work out what to put into the movement program.
That's right.
Yeah. There's a, you know,
There's history there.
It's history.
Yeah. And that's why we're here to share some of that. So that's great. And I know what you're going to be able to help share for today too, Marianne, is that you're very passionate about following the advance, the pro implementation. So it'd be great to sort of hear what you sort of noticed with that. So I wonder from here whether we sort of move on to like just, you know, how did you feel, you know, Dr. Minson sort of changed the way you practice?
You want to start with me or go back to the beginning?
Yeah, well, let's start there. We'll go backwards this time. How's that sound? Keep novelty in the conversation.
Well, I'd have to say, having used my extra lesson for quite a long time before starting using sound therapy, the DLS and then the ILS in particular, it just revolutionized the way that I understood the children. And the way that it helped me make sense of that whole sensory system, that the body works as a whole. Like, yeah. You know, I had one piece of the puzzle and then the ILS brought another piece of the puzzle. And, you know, we've all over time learned that, you know, nutrition is another piece of the puzzle. A child's got to be healthy to really benefit from all of or any of these therapies in many ways. So yes, I'd have to say it really totally changed the way that I saw the children progressing. And I can still remember noticing, like, the first thing I'd always notice, the child was happier. And then I'd think, yes, we're on our way. And to see a child feeling happier after a couple of, well, sometimes a few sessions, sometimes a little bit longer, but that became such an important indicator. And I think it's the beauty of the music that it's helping them feel like, I am here. I am me. They're feeling that for the first time. So, that's one of the things.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Doreen?
Yeah, I would say it's interesting. It changed me dramatically. And I'd been practicing for a good 20 years prior to this, and felt really strong in understanding the sensory systems and how they integrate together. And I'd say the journey down this road of getting so much more depth into understanding auditory processing and understanding the power of the input to the vagus nerve was just really life-changing in my practice. And that auditory system, obviously, it's integrating with a lot of things in that vestibular system that I was always so, you know, I called the vestibular system the grand conductor and, you know, the cerebellum and these things. But getting this input to the vagus nerve and the parents coming back each week and saying they're happy, their child's happier, just like you talk about, Marianne. And, you know, it's how do you not become passionate about this tool, this approach, because you're changing lives more dramatically and noticeably, and then it allows us to do our other therapeutic interventions if we get that. Now we even have different language as we talk about polyvagal theory with it, but we now can do the other, you know, interventions. Once we get this nervous system open and more integrated in that body awareness and these kinds of things. And so my husband would be the first one who's told me many times, like, you've changed, you know, and, you know, ILS has changed you, and it's changed my passion towards my work again. And my, what I love to do made it be even more skilled to change lives. And definitely ILS, Kate and Ron's, they did this. You know, without them, this wouldn't have happened. They started ILS and they made this happen. So, so grateful to them.
Yeah. And Anne?
Yeah, I would say it turned my pediatric practice upside down. I was able to make headway and make changes in my clients that would take years and years, if ever getting the deep neurological changes and sensory processing changes. And for that, I am forever grateful. It opened up a whole nother world. And the study, the in-depth study with Dr. Ron, the audiometric test, using that test to sort of take a look at the entire body and the ability to process frequency was just so exciting to me. I have a background in yoga and other kinds of sound therapies that are a little bit more esoteric, not so esoteric these days, right? But it started to tie everything together, all of my holistic endeavors. And just being able to make changes in gut motility. I had kids that were like going to the bathroom now, you know, every other day instead of once every 2 weeks, right? So how, you know, how is that happening? Was it with frequency, with sound? So I just continued to use the sound therapy whenever possible, whenever I can. And when I'm working with clients where I can't access either the focus programs or the SSP, this offshoot that many of us are involved in, then I don't get the changes and I'm not as excited. So it really brought life back into my practice. And into me. I went on the DLS, the dynamic listening systems. I put myself on programs and it completely changed my life. So it wasn't easy, but it was real. It was an authentic, massive movement psychologically and emotionally.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Dylan?
Yeah. So can you hear me okay?
Perfect.
Okay. So to circle back around, I actually was thinking, you know, I heard about Dr. Minson and Kate through Lucy Miller, and she had... took me a tour of the Star Center and just kind of embodied this idea of these two incredible humans, these two people. And so that's why I kind of, you know, when Mary Jones had mentioned like ILS, I was like, yeah, this is what I do. And, you know, I have an atypical nervous system to begin with. And I jumped in on I didn't even do the basic training. I went straight to the advanced training. And I remember meeting Dr. Minson, and I think I annoyed him a little bit with my questions. And he had this, it was the first time I had met a person that had so much intellectual understanding of things, but like a heart with it, you know, like he saw right through me and all my accommodations and all my junk and all my stuff. And he honed in on me and he humbled me very, very, very gently, graciously. And he put me on my first program because he said, there's no way, Dylan, that you can begin to do this with clients unless you do it on yourself, you know, and have an understanding of what this does for your neurological system. And so that, you know, started a journey for me in understanding sound that I had not really ever understood, or even accepted in context of my own processing as something that, you know, that fills a picture, that adds color to an experience. And, you know, I was on a mission to prove myself in so many different ways. And he stepped into a father role for me, being away from home in South Africa, and Kate into a mother role of acceptance of my challenges and my differences, and my strengths. And it changed my perspective of seeing, the capacities of a child or a parent in my care, and a true appreciation for sound. And how I still today can't even imagine how he was able to take the frequencies of sound and make music out of it that changes a nervous system the way it does. And so for me, it was the part or the start of a journey that took me on self-discovery, and more importantly, a discovery of my interaction with my clients, that today I still wonder what would Dr. Minson do if he was here. What would he say? What's the wisdom? What's the wisdom, Dylan, that he would tell this parent? And it, you know, I go back to his opening paragraph of the manual that was this thick that he gave me in advanced training, about the stress on mothers and how they take responsibility. And I apply it every day. And so, such a profound impact on my practice, my life, my personal experience of my sensory world. I have a short story later on, when I was in advanced training, when we get there.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing that. And thanks so much for sharing that heartfelt sort of personal journey.
Very much so.
So I just want to just thought to pop to my mind from what you've been saying is I just want to build on that idea of feeling 100% cared for by both Ron and Kate, that they did feel like they were kind of offering parenting, that they took care of you to make sure when we were traveling across the country to go give trainings, that everything was in place that we needed to. I think one time I actually was scheduled to go fly and I was coming down with the flu, and Kate actually had a care package waiting on the other end for me of some, vitamin C, and just it was, yeah, just go. She goes, when you fly in, go to bed, take all this, and just let us know how you are in the morning, and just feeling so cared for. And I think that speaks, when you think about leadership, I think that speaks to leadership through care and guidance, because I wanted to do my utmost best of sharing their knowledge to the practitioners who were coming to the train. I wanted to share that passion what I saw in my own clinical practice of the shifts and changes that happened from using the ILS system. But not only then I felt so cared for, and I wanted to share that mission with them so much. And I think that sort of they're morphed when we moved back to Australia, that I definitely wanted to continue to share that marriage, that message. So that was the first thought that sort of come to mind from listening to you all. But then I guess the second thing that I think that sort of resonated for me. I have, when I started my journey with ILS, was understanding the nervous system. I think that that in terms from this bottom up integration, that, and I, what you said before, Marianne, of how we really integrated the body with the brain. And I feel that's where the ILS focus system and the whole framework around that really brought that forward. And having more of that sort of that multisensory, that neurosequential model, that we have to build the base, that we have to build the foundational components in the nervous system, because they do lay the base that all the other things that we're building on as humans sort of have to move forward for. So that was very impactful for me, knowing that I'm starting at the, sort of, the foundations or the root causes, or getting to help build a nervous system. And so I know that was a big piece that was very transfer, that transformed the way I practiced and how I looked at nervous systems with the kids that I was working with. So lovely. So I wonder from here then, if people want to sort of share a little bit more about maybe some of that, pearls of wisdom or guidance that you did sort of experience through your interactions with Dr. Minson. So I wonder maybe if we circle back and go backwards, and Dylan, if you want to sort of unpack a little bit more about what you're going to share.
Right. Okay. So felt this pressure, in teaching to kind of share their hearts, right, and their passion for making that difference. And my experience with Dr. Minson, very much in my personal interaction with him and with Kate, was their breath. He had so much to say in few words and would take breaths, and we were in advanced training, and he realized that I don't breathe well, and I didn't, my nervous system was really on fire. And he leaned me up against the wall in front of everybody, and I was nervous. And he had me take a deep breath. He had his hand on my chest, and then he asked me to sigh and start with a high octave and go down to the lowest octave I could make and feel the vibration of my larynx down my spine. And I did it 4 or 5 times with him. And later on that, it was life-changing for me. But then later on that day, we were doing the voice prayer, and I heard my voice for the first time. Because I was taught as a child to have no voice, and that my voice didn't matter. And it was a really big thing. And I think Kate understood immediately. And she came and pulled me out. We actually spent a good bit of few hours together, kind of working through some of that. And in terms of what I learned from Dr. Minson is how breath and your arousal and your pace can make such a difference. And it changed my practice, my interaction with my peers, my kids, my clients, and how listening to, at that time, the focus, you could, when you're in tune, you could see the shifts in someone's nervous system with the changes in the music. And it became really important for me to teach people and to show them that you can then match the activities with that arousal shift and with that change in their system. And you can, you can just wait for the music and then wait for the shift. And it was just such a powerful thing for me, because honestly, prior to this event change for me, in meeting Dr. Minson and becoming trained and then having the honor to represent their baby, their life's work, to other therapists, and clinicians and psychologists, was an incredible honor. And I didn't ever feel quite worthy of it, you know? I felt like I just, I can't match him, but I'm going to do my best. But certainly, what a powerful thing that he was able to show me that potentially is a personal experience or learning thing. It's not something you can get in a book or you can just hear about. Someone walks you through that, you know? And he did. He walked me through it. And I've had the honor to walk some people through that too, thanks to him. So that was the big thing for me in terms of breath. And I can't tell you this week, three times, just yesterday, we had a volunteer situation where we had six families come to the clinic and we took care of the kids. And a new boy showed up that we had never seen before, and he was so dysregulated. And his mom was trying to stop him from leaving. And I'm like, just wait for him to breathe. Let's just pause. Let's wait for him to breathe. He breathed, and we're like, let's go to the Lego room. And he just shifted. And there's such a shift, such a change in my practice that I can't imagine. I can't imagine practicing any differently, thanks to him. So thanks for the opportunity to speak about it.
No, thanks for sharing. And you sharing now just made off. I was flicking through my advanced training this morning, sort of wearing up, and I just had this thought that came to me, and like so much of what they were doing was their thinking, some of those practices around breath work, around use of voice. It was like before its time. I mean, it was just like early. All these things now are becoming so much more like mainstream, or excuse me, all these different breath work strategies, or they're all becoming so much more part of the media, part of the norm. And they were practicing. I remember that, Dylan, about using our voice and breath in our training. And at the time, I just young therapist didn't really sort of get it and kind of think this is a bit out there. Where now it's like, oh my gosh, it's he was before his time. They knew all this stuff.
Totally before the time, right?
And in so many ways, and I was reflecting back on all our learning about the autonomic nervous system, and knowing that our focus system with it and our pro system, which integrates both the filter music but with the bone conductor, really massively impacting that part of our nervous system. And now what's all part of the language that's in the books on our bookshelves, how to impact the vagus nerve and the autonomic nervous system. And they were doing all this work back then. They had all the knowledge there. So thanks for sharing that about the breath. I think that's important. And
Yeah, and I'd like to add, before their time for sure in the medical establishment, I mean, I think this knowledge, Dr. Tomatis in France, which was Dr. Minson's mentor, was doing all this work early on. And I really give it to give my hand over to Ron, as a doctor, as a physician, to be doing this sort of more kind of esoteric work in his practice. The sounding and the vocal work that we used to do in the advanced trainings was some of my favorite work. And the information on intrauterine listening was so amazing to me. And I feel like we've, in order to abbreviate and consolidate and make things expedite to match the pace of the world, right? And what people have time for, we've lost some of those deep, beautiful things that were part of that 10-day training, the original training before there was an advanced and a beginning training. It was 10 days, and all of that, those days were packed with that kind of information. So that was beautiful. So Dylan, you talked about his awareness of breath and his Dr. Ron's ability to observe so astutely clinical demonstrations and being able to extrapolate, what to do about that using the sound therapy was always amazing to me. I had a client who did a listening test on her, and she needed a lot of sound for those lower frequencies in the body zone. And he said, "Well, she's got dysbiosis." And I said, "No, she doesn't. She mom didn't talk about any gut issues." And he said, "Yeah, she's got dysbiosis." And so I went back and asked mom, and mom says, "Yeah, she always has a stomach ache, every day after lunch, So his ability to just, you know, just pull all of that information together and to mentor so deeply in that way was always, I'll never forget it. And his attention to detail also went into his love of coffee, the peaberry, right? Coffee bean. He would spend some time on that in the trainings. And, you know, I learned a lot about that. This, like, just this really like intense focus on the details about a coffee bean. That's how he focused on clinical, you know, cases. It's how he focused on the vagus nerve, on the HPA axis, in such a way that I was inspired to go and to study for days on all these neuro things so I could really understand and articulate, you know, in the trainings. So for that, I am forever grateful. And also Kate's support of Dr. Ron in so many ways enabled him to just be kind of there present with his students and his clients. Did I answer the question?
Yeah, pearls of wisdom, pearls of wisdom and guidance. Yeah, I think so. And Doreen?
I was thinking back to, as Dylan stated, the honor it was to be asked to be a trainer. I remember crying. I was like, are you sure? Like, do you trust me to do this work that's so, you know, important? And what an honor that was. And anyhow, and what a gift it was. And the training was, I have those same feelings, and of like things felt like they gradually got more watered down as far as the educational, what we could had time to teach, and with the pace of the world, everything becoming virtual, people would do virtual trainings and then they'd come to the live training I did and they were like, oh, thank heaven for this, you know, like just immerse ourselves physically together, co-regulating, touching the equipment, really hearing real life stories from people in the room, as you know, etc. It was like the community that was built from every person that came to an ILS training was just a gift to meet these people around the country that were using, you know, just even interested. They hadn't started yet, but to know that they had that drive to want to learn about it. They were cut from the same cloth as the Minsons, as all of us. And so that was just such a gift that was blessed upon for all of us being trainers, meeting these individual other people are now colleagues, right? And I just think of Dr. Minson's wisdom and how detailed he was, like you were saying, Anne. And one story that stood out that I still use the term and I think of him every time I say it, like people write, anyhow, he would describe, like, he was such a teacher in the psychiatric hospitals. And he would have all these interns with him and he'd be going into their, you know, you can just visualize this, right? You're going in to get the history of your patient in this hospital. And then he said he'd have all these interns with him and he'd walk out the door and in the hallway be consulting with his residents, I guess we should call them. And he would say the term Gork, and Gork stood for God only really knows what's gone on in the past of this person's life, basically. And that wisdom of, it doesn't necessarily really matter. We're going to look at this individual today, who they are as they are right today, you know, which is now so much more into somatic experiencing thinking and, you know, where we've evolved for. But again, it was, his wisdom was so long ago. He was ahead of his time. And I use that term all the time. People say, when are you going to retire? And I say, Gork. You know, that's a question I'm getting more lately. And it's like, I know I'll never retire from sound therapy and listening therapy. And ILS, you know, Unite Focus, or Unite SSP program. So it's like, and that's because of, you know, the seed that has been planted by them. And, you know, you can't stop this feeling that we get with each client, every family, every adult, any individuals that we help. That feeds our soul.
Right.
So,
I love that. Great. Yeah. Actually, I think you make a really good point about building community and how those live trainings really did that. And I know personally, I used to love, like, you know, in the beginning of the day when we'd have all like so all the attendees, and so ILS would offer for people who had done their training already, you could come and do like a refresher, and so just sort of refresh yourself. And I used to love it when they would come back for refreshers, because then in the beginning of the day when people were introducing themselves, and then those people had the opportunity to share maybe some experience that they've had using the ILS system, or whether it was 6 months ago or 12 months ago that they took their initial training. And I remember being in Atlanta, Georgia, and it was a huge big training that we were doing, and Randall Redford was there as well. And this lady stood up, we were sort of going around, and told her story, and you can see that she had a bit of a speech impairment, but she was a medical doctor who had had a brain tumor and was in to the point where she had to have it removed, and she lost all her medical privileges and had to stop close up her practice, and she was in rehabilitation, getting, you know, an inpatient rehab hospital, getting speech, occupational physical therapy, you know, all the sort of therapies, and things weren't really moving with much momentum. And one of the practitioners, the occupational therapist, had completed an ILS focus training and started to bring her system into the rehab unit and started to use it with this lady. And she said her world just changed, where within she lost her ability to speak, and she started within a week getting words, within 2 weeks speaking in short sentences. She went from being 100% wheelchair bound to being able to walk with a walker, to at the end of the month actually just walking with a small walking aid. And she said, "And I'm here today to learn about this because it changed my life, and I want to be able to bring this to you know, the patients that I work with." And I just had goosebumps standing there listening to that story, just like, oh my gosh. And that was just one among many that I know that you all probably heard as well from practitioners. So I loved not only being an instructor, so I could go and sort of share the knowledge, but to have my cup filled by hearing the stories of people coming back. I mean, I saw it in my own clinical practice as well, but having people come back and share the stories, I think it's really important. And Anne, I just want to build on something you said about, and I know you tapped on it too, Doreen, how, you know, time has moved, where everything's become, the society's become so much more fast-paced, and people want snippets, a bit of information. You know, these longer immersive trainings are slowly starting to merge in certain sort of fields of learning. But, you know, where our training become less and less in terms of how much we dived into the neuroscience, and as you say, Doreen, went to having more online and a little bit of face-to-face, which people just sucked up. But I think that speaks to then going back, the power of what the different ILS programs offered. They are longer term, but they make you slow down. They make the nervous system rewire, or they facilitate the nervous system to really rewire itself and make these long-term changes that is going to help us be more adaptive in the world that we're living with, and that we should embrace that rather than critique it. Because, sorry, that's my reflection back on what you sort of said. So, Marianne, let me just repeat a bit about, because I've sort of diverted a little bit. So just sharing, you know, maybe some of the pearls of wisdom or guidance that you sort of got from Dr.
Well, one of the things, like so many things that people have said, have just brought back lots and lots of memories. But one of the things I can remember the first time that I trained with Ron was his whole thing about the chants. And he was so, it was one of his big things, the chants. And then I really liked his openness, because Maxwell in Australia, we were doing these intensives, and Maxwell would actually do osteopathic treatments on the children in these intensives. And he actually was seeing how did the child's nervous system accept the male chant versus the female chant. And his observation was that most of the children were more, their system
preferred the female chant, and it was only a few children that wanted the male. That was the one that felt comfortable for their nervous system. And, you know, Ron was willing to listen to that. Although this was one of his really big issues, he respected Maxwell enough that he listened to Maxwell. And so then mixed chant became a possibility. And I still today, every time we do a pro, the last soundtrack that they have is a chant. And I think it's one of those vital things that I know it had a few problems culturally and so on, but it does open something up for the children when they hear a human voice. And I think it used to be, it was why the children would suddenly start to sing after they'd been doing so many sessions. Their parents would say, oh, they're singing now. They've never sung before. And there could be other reasons, but I just remember him and Ron and his absolute enthusiasm for the Gregorian chants. And then I keep on having this memory coming back of when he came to Australia and he did the training. And Kate said, Marion, I think Ron needs to just get out of the train now and again. So I said, oh, okay. So I took him to high tea at the Hyatt in Canberra, which is, you know, that's a very prestigious place. And it was absolutely perfect because it was this old world sort of place and he could have a cup of coffee that he thought was reasonable and then all these high tea treats. And it was just, and he was like this delighted child. It was somehow meeting him. And then Kate said, whatever you did, that worked perfectly, because he just needed to have something that was enjoyable for him while he was there, rather than just, you know, giving more of his understanding. So that was one of my treasured memories. And another one, and these are just treasured memories, but another one was we took him out to dinner, and I don't know, I had this thing, you've got to make Ron laugh. So I turned up, at this stage I was doing some trainings in India, so I turned up in a sari, and that was something also, because, you know, I think it was bright pink silk. It was absolutely stunning material. And Ron sort of, oh, my goodness. And it was that thing of just, you know, finding the humour and, just ways to just give him a bit of distraction out of the seriousness of, you know, who's there, and it was really important that we got it and everything. So there's some of the things. And then I'd have to also say that Kate was the heart. He was the intellect, but Kate was the heart. And it was really, it needed to be the team, I think, for both of, you know, they teamed well together. So we could get the intellectual piece, but we could also get the heart from Kate. And I think that's something that I feel really deeply, and was very grateful that they were a team for all the times that we managed to interact because of the distance.
I love that. That's a really special share, Marianne. Very. So since we're kind of on this, you know, this theme now, anyone else have like a memory, something like some of the ones that Marianne just shared that that comes to mind that you'd like to share, of an experience?
I could share one that I can visualize very well. Was there was Kate and I were set to do a training in Vancouver, Canada, and Ron wanted to come along. They had, you know, piggybacked it on some vacation time, and so it was Ron and Kate and I in Vancouver. And the first night we tried to find a restaurant for dinner, they were all very crowded and loud, and that's Ron's last thing he wants, and we couldn't find anything else, I remember. And we found really delicious food, but it was really hard. You know, I just remember feeling awful. We didn't find that just right, quiet, peaceful restaurant to be together, you know. But then the next day, finding the coffee shop. So I have that experience. I don't drink coffee. So Ron and I could never have that conversation together. I live on tea and that's it. And I wake up with plenty of energy and don't need any caffeine. And so anyhow, but we searched and found this fabulous coffee shop. The atmosphere was fabulous, as well as he was happy with the coffee. And so I do have that pulling together of each day, actually, with finding the coffee for him, because we had a couple, 2-3 days together in this hotel up there. I just am grateful, right, for that time to be with him when he's just more, you know, he was on vacation and not just teaching, you know, or mentoring and stuff. But again, to me, it was always Kate and Ron, right? It was the team, and they are a perfect balance for each other and team, for sure. Glad they found each other.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. I can't remember the specifics, but I remember one of my training, I think, where Kate was my very first training, where Kate was my mentor. I think we were having dinner that night, and she was telling me about the story of how they met. And I'm not going to remember all the details, but I remember the main thing that sort of stood out to me, that she said she had like a message from the universe that she had to go to Denver, that she was going to meet somebody there. And again, you know, I'm a young therapist who's very sort of grounded into the here and now, the reality. That wasn't my world. It is now. And but she said she has followed, you know, these messages from the universe that she was going to go to Denver, that she was going to meet, and that's what happened. And I remember just thinking, wow, for all these little things that she would, because I remember when I was also talking about, you know, being conflicted about moving back from living in the States back to Australia. And she just said, just put it out into the universe and it'll tell you messages about where you need to be. And I remember at the time thinking, I'm not really so sure about it. What was she saying? But now, yeah, you put it out there, the intention of what comes back to you, you know, those things that you just come across your plate that you're like, how did that happen? I was just thinking that. And then, again, before their time of things. Anyone else have something else I would like to share?
Yeah, I remember teaching with Ron, and I know that's one of the prompt questions that we started.
Yeah,
with
that's one of my next question. I was going to say, for those people who had the pleasure of teaching with Ron, can you share about some of those experiences?
He was not easy to co-teach with. He was not easy for me to co-teach with. And I think tying into this idea that Ron was like a little kid, he needed to have fun. And sometimes he needed support having fun when he was in the work environment or during a training. And he flipped between that state of being a little kid and being so excited about his content and being a little bit rigid about sharing the stage, maybe. Or, you know, there was just sort of some energy that I got triggered frequently. He was not easy for me to teach with. I love teaching with him because I continue to learn so much from him. But it's kind of like he was an older brother, where you have this sort of a little bit of a sort of a contentious sort of relationship with. And I loved it. I loved every minute of it. And I look back at it with such fond memories.
Anyone else have a teaching experience with Dr. Minson, I want to share?
Go ahead, Joanne.
I was just going to say, I can remember feeling a bit in awe of him, that you had to sort of, you know, I remember him teaching the auditory pathways and, you know, our middle ear muscles, and there was something he was very passionate about it, and really believe that this is the underlying mechanisms that you all need to understand, because this is what we're impacting with the work, you know, with the sound that we're doing. And And I can remember almost feeling this little sense of frustration when people didn't have that memorized quite as perfectly as what that's what he did, because obviously he just knew it inside and out, and to him it was all simplified. But for us, it was like all these new terms and all these mechanisms and how they all impacted it, and just yeah, the pathways. And but I remember that being something that he thought, and I rightfully so, Enjoying what we're going to say.
I was just going to share that when the Safe and Sound Protocol came along and Dr. Minson moved into a role of being a support, director for any difficult case studies, he was pulled in to try and help solve them. And at one point, I was asked to meet with him once a month for about an hour on a phone call. To go over, like he'd consult if it was a pediatric client, he had some questions. And then we moved into like meeting monthly and for maybe 6 months, 8 months, something like that. And I treasured just the conversation one-on-one with him because I didn't see him anymore. I hadn't been to Denver and this wasn't going on since, I think during COVID actually. But it was a weird feeling too for me to be coaching or supporting him because it's like, yeah, he's always been the mentor to me. But trying to help him come from the clinician perspective of what I was seeing with the SSP, because he had never used it. And so trying to help him come, soften his thoughts about the SSP, but also to, I remember really validating him because all he is hearing is what went wrong. Those are the cases that are coming to him. And he's not being, his body, his mind isn't being immersed in what's going really well with so many clients using this program. And so, of course, we would all have, a half glass empty attitude about this new program if you're not working with it and seeing how it's supporting nervous systems and change, right? But that was a difficult task because I was like so enthusiastic about the SSP, but I had to squelch it. Talking to him because I knew, I mean, like the ILS is his baby, and so anyhow, that was just a really, a gift in many ways to have those conversations and to put myself in his shoes, but also trying to support him with what was kind of new and life is changing and it's hard. I get it. And so that was an interesting time.
Yeah, I can remember having a conversation with him. It was one time when I traveled back. I think I was talking about the focus system at a neurofeedback conference that was being held in Denver. So I was going back and also spending time at ILS getting some updates so that we could bring it back to Australia. And so I'd had some books ordered that I had sent to ILS. And I think it was the first day I arrived. And so I'm in chatting with everyone, and Dr. Minson and I are in like the conference room, because that's where the books that I'd ordered were. And we're just chatting, but we're just getting all caught up in talking about neuroscience. And because one of the books I then opened up, I just ordered Porges. This is obviously quite a few years back. I just ordered Porges, big, his big, heavy reading book. And so I unraveled it, and so him and I started this big, exciting conversation about polyvagal theory and the science of the nervous system and the brain science and all this sort of stuff. And people were asking us, because I think we had to go for lunch, but we're still sort of chatting away. And I just remember that was always something that he had a passion for, and that it was fun having those sort of conversations with him. And then in the end, he's like, I need to call Porges. It's been a while since I spoke to him. And then next thing we know, we have this sort of partnership. And we used to talk about polyvagal theory as part of our focus trainings, but I'm sure you all agree that the knowledge that we have now about polyvagal theory compared to what it was with those few sort of points that we made is like so much more vast, a deeper understanding indeed. So what I'd like to do now is just unpack a little bit of, we've been talking about the ILS focus system, and but there's not a lot of people, a lot of people who are focus trained don't know much about the advanced pro system. And I think there's a lot of knowledge in there that I'd love just for us to have on record to sort of to share about those phases. And I know, Anne, you talked a bit about it in terms of them being a bit before their time, even with in utero listening. And we know how that's part of the focus not the focus program, sorry, the pro implementation model of the around those 30 sessions over over phases. So Mary, I'm gonna, I know Anne, you've probably got some things you'd like to contribute on that as well, but I wonder if we could maybe start with Mary Anne. And that purely is Anne, because I know Mary Anne, you know, has been really impassioned about and really about implementing that pro model for many, many years. And I know from personal conversations with her, she has some pretty amazing stories to share about during that the phase where we get the mother's voice phase. I think you wanna, so maybe Marianne, if you could just talk just a brief overview of what the pro program looks like and then unpack a bit about that mother's voice section.
Yeah, well, I still do the 30 sessions and I just do it across 10 weeks to match what happens in the Australian school term. And I suppose I now just see it. We're going up through the frequencies, just the same as what the focus has then been reflected. So you start in those lower frequencies, you climb up through the frequencies up to 4,000 for children under seven, or 8,000 for the over 7-year-olds. And then you come back down through the frequencies. So I've probably dropped out using some of the, you know, the activation, the receptive phrase, the expressive phase, things like that. But just to talk mainly about the mother's voice, one of the first times I ran mother's voice, I think will be the one of the most astonishing ones I ever did. The mother couldn't be present, so I had to record her voice and then play it. And I had this little boy who was about seven. And looking back, he was probably, you know, possibly on the spectrum. He'd been diagnosed ADHD. And it was just so interesting because once he started listening to his mother's voice, he came and he crept up into my lap and wanted me to hold him, which was just extraordinary. And then as we progressed over the days, he went from wanting to be held. It was like he recapitulated his development, that then he wanted to be contained and in a way that he could just, he was then exploring what options of the toys that we had to play with. And it was like he was wanting to recapitulate finding boundaries. And by the end of it, his mother just, she said, "I cannot believe I've got," instead of this child that was like this bouncy ball bouncing off the walls, that she had to monitor his every movement, every, you know, watch his mood. She said, "I've just got this really soft, receptive child." And so it was wonderful that he was my first child that I worked with mother's voice, because it just showed me the absolute power of the child going back. And Tomatis's original theory hasn't necessarily stood the test of time, but the child listening to those high frequencies, because the child's voice that of his actual maternal parent activates centers right across the brain. So it's this wonderful exercise in integration is what the research, I think, is now showing. And so we have actually held on to it. So in all our focus programs with the kids, we now put in a section where we just have this, the 5 days the parent has to come in, even in the focus, and the parent has to make themselves available in the session so that they are available for the child and that they are actually reading stories often. And then in the last segment, when we play the female chant, we're often having them play together. So they're taking turns and it can really be the thing that shifts the parental relationship. And it's a little bit of a window opens, and if the parents can keep on working on that, then something really shifts. So I still hold on to, I do it in all my pros when I run the kids through pros. And if I have adolescents, I'll say to the parent, you've got a choice. You've got a child, they're 15 or they're 17. Are you going to allow that child to keep on struggling with the difficulties? I'm quite point blank. Or can we just do this in a shorter time frame and you will see the changes come over this 10-week period? And then we can just do some weekly sessions to just reinforce the changes that we have brought about.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that actually will, you know, do the pro and work out how can they manage to do that, they all, what amazes me, once they start to see the child changing, and then they'll say, oh, you did say there was a time when we could come in and be with, oh, yes, we'll get to that. That's mother's voice. But they come and they really want to be with their child because they've already seen changes in their child.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think it does a lot. It works back into that early attachment.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I hope that gave a bit of a view.
But didn't you say, I remember you telling me about some cases you had where even the child, it's almost they went back into, you know, early developmental sort of phases where some of them even curled up in a fetal position, where some kids have gone back and started talking more in like baby talk or.
Yes, we've had children that we always have to prepare the parent that mm-hmm. maybe your child might regress
mm-hmm.
and do the baby talk.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can just go with that, it will move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And always within that those five sessions, we get the change coming through.
Yeah. For our listeners, the mother's voice section is like, yeah, when the mother is either recorded their voice or, but I know that you do it in live where they're sitting and they're talking into the voice product, but their voice is being filtered. So it's just not sitting there listening. So it's a really interesting part or segment of some of the original ILS work. So is there anything else you wanted to, yeah, I was going to say.
Oh, sorry. Just to interject about that, the whole Dr. Tamanis getting things wrong because he thought that's the filtration at 8,000 hertz was a simulation of intrauterine listening, whereas listening through the amniotic fluid would bring in just the lower frequencies. So he actually had it switched. And I was wondering about that in the advanced training, and I was kind of like, I didn't trust my question, you know, but that was the question. I think, and I've been contemplating that because it was very effective for my clients as well when I use the pro system. It's the prosody and the cadence of that mother's voice. And it's they're actually, if you're filtering at 8K and they're used to, like when they were in utero, listening at the lower frequencies, they're getting the flip. They're getting the other frequencies, right? That mother's voice that they didn't get in utero. So I was just thinking, pondering, maybe that's where the magic comes. That's where the efficacy comes in, that there are the cadence and the prosody is there. And I've had kids like listen for a couple sessions and says, wait a minute, that's my mom, right? So they recognize, and it's almost like on this deep cellular level that they're like getting that memory is coming up. So I don't know. I think it was effective, not for the reasons that Dr. Tomatis thought it was, maybe. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Anybody else do mother's voice at all?
I think in thinking about the SSP and using the mother's voice,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Using the female voice, the, you know, all these sound therapies come together. They intersect and they're woven, and the consciousness of these people who originated these theories are sort of, they didn't steal from each other. They just were on a lateral track, right? So I think a piece of it too is just the human voice, just like you were mentioning the female chants. Right, that human voice after all of that beautiful instrumental Mozart and those beautiful harmonics and the violins, and finally we've got some like human voice, right? So again, this intersection of the Tomatis lineage, Minson, DLS, focus with Dr. Porges's work. And I want to say, Marianne, that Ron frequently mentioned the Australian group being responsible for the female chants. He's like, okay, I had to give in. We're going to add some female. And I loved them, and a lot of my kids loved them. So thank you very much for advocating for the female chants. Mm.
Dylan, did you have something you wanted to share about?
Thank you, Joanne. The voice was obviously a big thing for me, you know, in my personal experience wise. And so, you know, the pro giving us access to the different, those different levels of lower frequencies, you know, the 0 to 2,000, or, you know, was the 2,000 to 4,000. We had these parameters that I think really gave us the opportunity to support that grounding foundation that you were talking about, and then layering on those frequencies of the mother, you know, and the mother's voice in terms of their own voice and then their mother's voice. I think there's a existential experience in that that's really hard to quantify or to really, I think, deeply understand. But certainly in all the clients that I have seen, and I continue to still use the pro, there's a nuance. You know, Kate always said that she created the focus for home use, right, and stretched it. And you know, the advanced training gave us the capacity to tailor it just a little and find that sweet spot for someone in terms of selecting the right frequencies. I remember personally, you know, I had been through the pro version twice personally, because I have an auditory processing challenge, or did, or have. and the speech and language bandwidth, do you remember that? The bandwidth was 1500 hertz to I think 6000 or something like that. That was like my sweet spot. And I remember being able to listen to that bandwidth of music and select any one of the tracks. And I could bust through an evaluation and some paperwork in no time. And for me, it actually became a little bit of a performance enhancement modification to some degree, because my system learned what it felt like to experience an interaction or experience an activity with the support. And it's like it remembered what it felt like. I also remember playing around with it, and I was in the 0 to 2,000 hertz. I'm like, what is a 3-bone conduction feel like? because I don't get dizzy and I don't have a nervous system, you know, a very under-responsive vestibular nervous system. And so, you know, that was one of those experiences where I felt dizzy for the very first time, because I could read a book upside down going backwards in a car and never feel a thing. And so, you know, just having that that personal experience, and then watching a child on a swing and watching them engage and then become aware of, wait, I just met threshold. Oh, wait, I just experienced my mother's voice. It's such a powerful thing that I think it's really hard to quantify, but it's very, very tangible. And it's such an honor to be a witness of that. And I think of, you know, we talked just briefly, and if I may just add, you know, how they were before their time. Isn't it really interesting how that, like sound, like dissipates, how the ripple of their impact continues still today for me in terms of my interactions, and certainly in our understanding of how far they were ahead of their time and what they've contributed. You know, their mission, I remember always Kate saying, and Dr. Minson saying, that they wanted music to be, this kind of music and this impact, to be available to everybody, and did everything in their power, bottom line or not, to make that possible. Mm-hmm. And I remember that. I totally remember that about them. It was totally an honor thing.
Mm. I love that. And that was kind of leads me perfectly into your thoughts on what you feel like is legacy. Legacy that Dr. Winston sort of ends. I'm just going to start with
a thought. Please start.
I'll let you guys ponder that a little bit of, yeah, a little bit about, you know, what is sort of legacy do you think he leaves? But I guess thoughts that are popping in my mind right now that I didn't really highlight before, but the impact that also the impact that it had on me was just, you know, in our segment in our training, we had, you know, the ear to brain connection is really unpacking the connection of the importance of our ear in our overall integration of all the, from the evolutionary biology to how we take in sound, to sound and emotion connection, to just how sound is. I remember Dr. Minson was saying, you know, sound is it's a nutrient for the brain, that's how our brain sort of wires and gets energized. And I think for me as an OT who never really, we learned a lot about sensory systems, we thought the auditory part, you know, sometimes there were boundaries between professions, oh, that's the audiologist or that's a speech pathologist. But I think all of us, from mental health to counselors, everyone should know about how our ear takes in sound, the efficiency it does, its response in threat when we feel under threat and under safety, but also even just processing efficiently to acoustic information for language and connection and attention, but our emotional well-being. I think that was a huge part of my journey in since going to that first training with Mary Jones, is this system, this ear, and how we take the world in, and then how we can work with sound, and has a huge impact on our well-being. So with that, I think that for me is, you know, I'll open it up to you all in terms of thoughts on the legacy you think they left behind. So who and Doreen?
I've got one. What? Yeah, one of the ones that's just come to me is the combination of the air and the bone conduction. Because through the bone, then the vibration can move through the body. And to just see that every day we're just in all the sounds that are around us. It's sound is just a vibration. And I always find when I explain to the children when I'm going to do an auditory test that we hear not just through our ear conduction but their bone conduction. And they're surprised when they actually feel that when you're testing their auditory system. And it's like this, it gives validation for the child that, oh, this person knows what they're talking about. So I'm very grateful that Ron introduced me into using the audiometer and reading the results in a way that, yeah, that was a real gift that he gave that I haven't seen replicated by anybody else. And yeah, so I think bone conduction is one thing that was very, very important. And to retain that through the focus system was also something that it was a really good decision to do that.
Mm-hmm. And that was that sound perception test that you're talking about, Marianne.
Yeah, the sound perception test.
You looked at the graph. You looked at the graphs of both air conduction and bone conduction, and there was a lot of theoretical background about how they looked and how the person was taking sound. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
I agree. Very. Mm. Anyone else you like to share, Doreen?
Yeah, I just was going to say, you know, it was mentioned earlier, but just the thought of him being a psychiatrist using sound in practice, I mean, what a legacy that is, right? And then for him being willing to step out of the box and be brave and do that, and then Kate and Ron teaching all of us, continuing to spread this, you know, I mean, I remember when I first started doing it, my husband saying, well, if it's that good, how come not everybody's doing this? And I said, because it takes time for change to happen. It takes warriors like all of us. But Ron was one of the initial warriors, right? And so that legacy, the fact that so much now about sound, you know, we know sound influences more areas of the brain than other sensory systems, you know, I mean, it's so powerful. And so it just speaks to, you know, integrated listening, dynamic listening systems, integrated listening systems with the Minsons, moving into Unite ILS now, and the continued growth of this type of approach. That's on Dr. Minson.
Thank you, Doreen. That's it. Anne?
Yeah, I feel like he and Kate were placed historically at a time and place where they were destined to carry this legacy of sound therapy, modified music therapy. And Ron came to it, you know, honestly, you know, to help his daughter, right? So his heart was always in it. And for me, watching a professional integrate his heart chakra, his deep family love with therapeutic intervention, and then carrying it forward like a mission. It was his mission to keep it going and bless his heart. It was not easy for him to compromise, to go from the big box, the DLS, to the waste pack, the iPods, right? He and I had many discussions about that, you know, like, is this, you know, is powerful, right? So he kind of was dragging his heels because he wanted to preserve the power and the efficacy of what he had experienced, and that was why he was a heel dragger. He was the perfect person because of his kind of conservative, you know, like strong mind and focus to drag his heels and keep things the way they were, right? So those things for me are his legacy.
Love that. Dylan?
You guys have said it all. I'm tapped out. I just, you know, just, I really appreciate the honor of representing my memories of him, and for you to honor him in this way. You know, I think there are so few of us that, or they aren't so few, there are few of us that have had that personal experience with him. One of my favorite experiences is a later in life experience with him. His hip was bothering him, and we went to dinner together, and how authentic and humble and curious he was about his experience and my experience, and you know, how I was doing. It was just truly a good soul. Mm-hmm. Solid soul.
I love that. Yeah. Thanks, Dylan. I guess the last thing that pops to my mind in terms of legacy is definitely building on everything that you all said, but really having that multi-sensory approach, that we are complex beings, that the power of integrating the focus system or the pro system with movement, sensory motor movement, knowing that we're really sort of impacting those underlying sensory, vestibular, proprioceptive, tactile systems, which are, again, the building blocks of our nervous system. So I think for me, I think integrating those, having that sort of multi-sensory approach is another part of their legacy in this work. Yeah. So I'm not sure if anyone, I just want to thank you all for coming on today and sharing your memories with us and with everyone who's going to listen today. And it's really filled my heart to see you all again. I know it's been a number of years, and I look forward to that opportunity to do that in live again. Hopefully I can make it across to one of the next gatherings. It'll be wonderful to see you all. So thank you. Thank you, Doreen, for showing a picture
of you.
Dr. Vincent. Yeah, thank you.
Take care, guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nice to see you all.
I hope you all enjoyed this conversation. For me, it was lovely to connect again with some old friends and share story. There are a couple of other trainers who are unable to attend, clinicians Mary Jones, Andrea Pointer, and Cindy Dawkins, who were very much missed. Being an ILS trainer was a special time in my life. To provide you with a little bit more background about the connections of the SSP and integrated listening systems and then UNITE, so integrated listening systems that was formed by Dr. Minson and his wife Kate and Randall Redford partnered with Dr. Porges to bring the Safe and Sound Protocol into the therapy world. A couple of years later, ILS was then bought by UNITE. I am the clinical director at Integrated Listening Australia, the official partner of ILS, supporting the Safe and Sound Protocol and the Integrated Listening System, Focus System. To find out more about the ILS system or the SSP, contact UNITE in Denver, or if you are located in Australia or New Zealand, contact Integrated Listening Australia. Wishing you all kindness, Joanne.